Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Dry Cleaner Cast presents Need to Know. Need to Know is a podcast featuring conversations with security experts focused on the terrorism and intelligence stories dominating the headlines. This podcast is written, edited, and presented by Chris Carr. This is Need to Know.
On today's podcast, we're joined by author and investigative journalist David Nywert. And on this episode, we're going to discuss the latest news and developments with the far right. Just before we begin, a quick reminder. Our film, The Dry Cleaner, is now available on Amazon and iTunes. If you go to www.drycleanercast.co.uk/watch the film, you can get a link to your preferred application there. Also, if you really enjoy this podcast, please leave a review on your preferred podcast app. Those reviews do make a huge difference. It helps new people discover the show. This is the first podcast of 2020. I decided to start with a Need to Know episode because there's been a lot of developments on the far right. And as other things crop up, I'll probably be making more Need to Know episodes. I've had all sorts of things going on in the world at the moment. A little bit difficult to keep track of. So I'm doing my best to figure out what we can do to address some of those things going on in the world. There'll be another podcast on the last Friday of February, and that will be our next scheduled show. There may be other podcasts in between, depending on what's going on in the world and who I can find to chat about it. So without further ado, we will get going. I hope you enjoy our first podcast of 2020 and our first podcast of the 20s. Hope everybody's having a great new year, and I wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the filmmakers and sponsors of the film, The Dry Cleaner.
David, welcome back to the podcast. Just for the benefit of new listeners, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I have been writing about the radical right since the late 70s. And when I was a daily news reporter, we had a major infestation of neo-Nazis in the Northwest during the 80s and 90s that I wound up doing a lot of writing about. And so in the 90s, I started writing, was one of the first journalists to start writing about the militia movement. And so after Oklahoma City happened, I became a militia expert. And as air quotes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I really, the 90s is when I really made this a dedicated beat, and I've been reporting on it as a dedicated beat since about 1995. So, and didn't have a whole lot of business in the early part of the 21st century, except that mostly I was seeing a lot of filtering of radical right ideas out into the mainstream, and particularly the spread of conspiracy theories and growth in the whole conspiracy theory industry, enabled mainly by, you know, the post 9/11 issues. I actually started out as an environmental reporter, so I've always tried to keep my hand in doing that. And one of the things that happened is that, so I you know, as time went on, and I was writing these books about hate groups and hate crimes and all of those kinds of things, I None of those books ever sold very well. I mean, honestly, I got accused for being an alarmist for a book I wrote in 2009, warning that the mainstream conservative movement was becoming increasingly radicalized. That's now pretty widely considered pretty prescient.
Yeah, you're very much ahead of the game on that one.
But at the time, it sold horribly. I got widely criticized for it. And so, in 2015, I published a book about killer whales because I do that. I do go spend time with them as a way of keeping my sanity. It wound up being far and away my best-selling book ever.
It's a bit like that with musicians, isn't it? It's always the unexpected song is the hit.
but except now it's been passed by writing about my book called America has definitely surpassed all my previous books, and that was a book that I started writing before Trump got elected, because those of us who were observing the scene could easily see that his candidacy was doing a tremendous amount to revivify the radical right and to bring it into the mainstream as well. And started writing the book really with the intention, the thought that, well, he's probably going to lose, but even if he loses, we're going to be dealing with this for a very long time. And then he won. So,
yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, he did.
I drank a bottle of scotch that night. Yeah. It was probably about 2/3 of the way through the book at that point. And I was planning to use the scotch to, celebrate Clinton's victory. And I just wound up drinking it all that night and not being even the slightest bit drunk because I was so upset. And I had a hell of a hangover the next day, though.
I bet. I remember watching the election till about 3-4 in the morning here, because obviously we get it quite a lot later than you, and it was just depressing. Yes. A very depressing night.
Yes.
Oh,
it was horrifying, because I knew that his election was going to just take the lid off the Pandora's box, and indeed it has.
Well, it was interesting, like how sort of Trump aligned himself with sort of conspiracy theorists like Alex Jones and people like that, and like Alex Jones has sort of ridden off Trump to some extent until recently, hasn't he?
Alex was out in Richmond yesterday.
Oh, was he?
No,
oh my gosh.
I didn't make it there, but yeah, no, he and his gang were touring the tooling around Richmond in their InfoWars Humvee.
Oh,
a big black
word.
Thing.
Oh my word.
Tooling around the streets of it, and he was standing up through the sunroof and using his loudspeaker to talk to the crowd as they toured through the streets of the city. It was something else, but that's Alex.
Well, I'm amazed he's still, I'm amazed he has any credibility, because there's been quite a few exposés recently, and also this big lawsuit, hasn't there, where he's been sued by the parents of the Sandy Hook victims. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm just surprised the game isn't up really with Alex Jones, but people still believe him, don't they?
Oh yeah. I mean, you would think that, since that child sex colony on Mars didn't really turn out to be a thing, and the gay frogs didn't turn out to be a thing, you'd think that people would have kind of figured out he's a scam artist by now. Lord knows who how many people have bought those worthless tinctures that he sells.
Oh man!
But grifter's got to keep grifting, man. That's what he does.
Yeah, no, he probably needs to grift harder now because he probably needs the money more than ever. But anyway, so
that's right.
Virginia State. So you were? Did you visit Virginia State? Or you were going to visit Virginia State?
No, Yeah, I wanted to go, but we weren't able to make it work. And I also suffered an injury
that
would have kept me from being able to. Yeah, it was pretty minor, but I would have been hobbled trying to get around Richmond. So we just decided not to go. And it probably turned out to be a good thing because, you know, nothing really happened except that I think a lot actually did happen that nobody wants to talk about. So.
Yeah. So what was there anything that you, because I'm assuming you were watching it online and stuff. Is there anything you've sort of noticed about, because give us a context of what this state rally was actually about, because it seems to be kind of a fusing of a few things.
Well, so the essence of the whole Virginia gun rally was, you know, a protest against the proposed gun control legislation that is going to be presented to the Virginia legislature in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Mind you, this is pretty mainstream, middle, down the middle of the road gun control legislation. The main component of it is that it would prevent you from buying more than one gun a month.
A month. Wow.
A month. Yeah. And this is apparently tyranny to the people who believe that the First Amendment prohibits any kind of regulation of weaponry whatsoever, which of course it doesn't. I'm sorry, the Second Amendment. And what they claim they're doing, you know, is defending the Constitution and defending the Second Amendment. But the unfortunate reality is that what they're really doing is just is engaging in sedition, because they go from, well, if they're going to pass this, then we're going to go to civil war.
Yeah.
One of the things that's been really disingenuous in much of the mainstream media coverage of this is that, people like, I heard it on NPR yesterday. Oh, well, we're not really sure what the nature of the threat was that Governor Northam declared a state of emergency for this rally. Well, it was really very clear what the threat was. These people had been on social media for 2 months arguing that they are claiming that they were going to be coming with their guns and were going. A lot of them were talking about storming the Capitol with their guns. A lot of them were talking about shooting people up. There is a lot of chatter about good sniper positions that you could take. Crikey. In Richmond.
Yeah.
And, you know, some very violent rhetoric that was going on around it. And believe me, officials had very good reason to be concerned, because it was very similar to the rhetoric that we saw prior to Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And on top of it, it was being supported by, these people who have a lot of weapons, you know, and particularly the Oath Keepers and a lot of these gun rights groups. So the militia types.
Yeah. So what is the relationship with the far right and this sort of Second Amendment activism, if that's the best way to put it?
Well, it's for the Patriot militia movement. Guns are the issue. It's the thing that they really are on about more than any others. Of course, they bleed over into everything else, including, you know, education and immigration and so on and so forth. But their core issue, the one about which they really start brandishing their weapons and rattling their sabers, is gun control. And these are folks who literally believe that the Second Amendment gives them the right to own any kind of weapon at all. I've gone to rallies where these guys will sit up and say, the Second Amendment gives me the right to have a tank if I want one, or a missile launcher. if you ask them to go far enough, they'll even say that, they have the right to own a nuclear bomb, you know.
Bit excessive for duck hunting, isn't it?
because it's any kind of arms.
That's
listed in the Second Amendment. So, and they believe stuff, which is crazy.
Yeah, no, it is mad. And you were saying as well, like, remember we've spoken in the past about some of these sort of gun rallies are places where far right sort of not leaflets, it's a bit dated, isn't it? But far right information is sort of spread and ideas are spread and people kind of use it as an excuse to spread their message.
Yes. Well, so in a lot of the dynamic that was going on yesterday in Richmond involves a dynamic very similar to what surrounded the Bundy standoffs both in Nevada and Oregon in 2014 and 2016, because those people were essentially, they called themselves constitutionalists, and they argue the same thing. Among the things that they argue is this idea that the federal government doesn't have the is actually very limited in its power, that the highest law of the land is the local sheriff.
Oh, yes.
Federal government, in their view, doesn't even have the right to own public land, which was part of the argument around the whole Malheur National Wildlife standoff in 2016. But it also was, and so a lot of the people who promote this are very close to the Oath Keepers and the Patriot Militia movement, because the constitutionalist ideas are come straight out of that same movement. And in fact, are this sort of the core beliefs of the Patriot Militia movement, these constitutionalist ideas. And let's be clear, constitutionalist interpretations of the Constitution are utterly bogus. They've never been endorsed by any court anywhere in America. And the frightening thing about it is that they are actually spreading to law enforcement officers all across the landscape, particularly county sheriffs. There's an organization called the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association that has been doing this since the early 2000s and is run by a guy named Richard Mack, who I covered back in 1994 when he was promoting militias as a tactic for people to stand up against attempts to regulate their guns. And Mac has been selling this idea. He's very close to the Bundys. He operates very closely with Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers. So you had, you know, 5 days before the rally, you had Stuart Rhodes going on a radio program and telling people that this was going to be something that they were going to be spreading out across Virginia. And so part of what's been happening in Virginia is that these counties, in anticipation of the gun control legislation, have been passing these ordinances declaring themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries. In other words, and the sheriffs of those counties are saying, we won't enforce any laws that are passed by Richmond that we believe are unconstitutional. And the county commissioners and the people who are running these counties are claiming that these laws will be null and void in their counties. And that was a lot of the people who showed up in Richmond yesterday were people from these rural Virginia counties who are objecting to the gun control legislation, and they're doing it this way. And in fact, there were a lot of law enforcement officers, including a ton of these sheriffs, who all lined up with a big banner saying, we support the Second Amendment, there and on the steps of the Capitol in Richmond. And so I think, even though it was very peaceful yesterday, mainly because anti-fascists stayed away and there weren't any opportunities for conflict. Mm. Even though that was the case, there was a lot of, I don't think it's over by any means in Virginia. And I think there's going to be, I do think that there are going to be some armed standoffs that occur when the state attempts to enforce these regulations.
When are those regulations going into effect?
Well, not until after the laws actually pass, and they haven't yet been approved by the legislature and signed by the governor. So it'll be sometime after those dates that happens.
Mm-hmm. That's quite disturbing. Really. It's kind of becoming a bit of mob rule, really, because they could start harassing people who've got a vote on that.
Yeah, they have. I mean, some of these militiamen have been doing some really engaging in some very, very ugly rhetoric around this. One of the militiamen who was there yesterday, a guy named Schoaf. Let me see if I can read to you. Yes, Joshua Schoaf, who operates under the pseudonym Ace Baker, has 540,000 followers on Facebook. And he goes on and does these live streams where he's been particularly targeting a certain African-American Virginia legislator. And here's a quote from him. "You should be pulled out of office by the hair on your head, walked down the streets of the Capitol, walked up to the steps of a swinging rope that's placed around your neck, because you, sir, are a tyrant and you're committing treason. And you would be a good example to set for the other elected officials who are doing the same thing." Now, this is the kind of rhetoric that, cause for people to be concerned. And of course, yesterday, all we heard from these guys is, we'll see, the media is just biased against us. They just want to depict us as violent and ugly, and we have no reason for doing so. Look how peaceful we are. I mean, that was a lot of the coverage that came out of the MES.
Yeah.
And it was like, can we talk about what you guys were saying before the rally? because that was pretty violent.
So what's the mainstream media's sort of reaction been to this event then? What is the debate kind of going on at the moment?
Well, I don't know that there is a lot of debate. I think most of the mainstream media just kind of took it at face value that, these guys weren't going to cause any harm, and it just kind of got blown out of proportion. Seriously, I think that's going to be the narrative that comes out of Richmond, and it's going to be, I think it's a huge mistake, because I think that it was really, Richmond was just the beginning. I mean, what Rhodes was talking about on his interview was, how this was the opportunity for constitutionalists to begin establishing the kind of Christian nation that they want, the kind of Christian state that they want, one in which the federal government has no power and all of the political power rests in the hands of local religious fanatics. So,
fun bunch indeed, this lot.
Yes.
Now, moving on from Virginia, there's been a rise in the last few months of kind of Nazi salutes going on at public events. And also there's been a rise in the use of like the OK symbol and racist sort of hijacking mainstream symbolism. Can you talk to us a little bit about this sort of stuff and why the far right sort of feel they can sort of hijack these symbols like the OK symbol?
Well, this has been part of the alt-right whole tactic from the very start, is that they love to appropriate symbols and symbology out of the mainstream and hijack it for their own purposes. And this can range from, say, their fetish about the Crusades, the European Crusades. They You'll see all across the alt-right that they use a lot of images of Christian crusaders, you know, white knights riding horses. You'll even see Donald Trump as a Christian crusader. And they use the crusade symbology because in much the same for almost identically the same reasons that Anders Breivik, the Norwegian terrorist who killed 77 people, did, you know, in his manifesto, because he saw himself as starting a second crusade against the invasion of Islam in Europe, and claimed that he was part of a new group of Knights Templar, and that they were going to be organizing these acts of terror across Europe to, you know, basically destroy the system. Or to drive, more appropriately, to drive the Muslims out. And this became extremely widespread among the radical right, and particularly the alt-right. It was picked up by people ranging from the Christchurch killer to all of these, you know, a lot of these guys who are committing mass murders. The El Paso killer also referenced it. So we're really, it's very common for these guys to hijack these things right out of the mainstream. And of course, the best known one is the OK symbol. Which is just otherwise an innocuous, you know, flash of the hand. You know, usually, I mean, hell, I used to use it all the time too. Cause it's like, hey, everything's a-okay, you know. It's quite harmless. But now these guys use it as a signal to each other that, because when you make the okay symbol, you also have three fingers sticking up, and those three fingers become a W in their world. And power is what you're actually signaling.
And the other interesting thing as well is then when people in the press pick up on this, they cry snowflake, these people, and say, oh, you know, we're just doing the okay symbol.
They're just saying, oh, you're just... That's right. And it has built-in plausible deniability, which is what they're actually weaponizing. Mm. They're weaponizing plausible deniability as a way of spreading their ideology. Because, anybody who says, you're flashing the OK sign, are you a white nationalist? And they're saying, oh, you're just being triggered. You're just another triggered liberal, you know. But, of course, it's really cynical. And it's a cynical manipulation, but these guys are nothing if not cynical manipulators. So,
yeah. Well, the other thing as well is just the actual Nazi salute seems to be becoming so popular, and you just think, are people just? I mean, especially with younger people, are they just like completely unaware of the history of that? And because I can't, like, with the school in Wisconsin? I mean, is every single person in that photograph actually a white supremacist, or some of them just going along with it and unaware? It's weird.
Yeah, kind of both, a mix. It's important to understand that a lot of the appeal of the alt-right, I mean, the alt-right's recruitment demographic is young white men between the ages of 13 and 30. They say that. They explicitly aim at trying to recruit people from that demographic, because those are the ones that are going to be most likely to join, and especially considering the kinds of appeals that they make, which are all about how, oh, white men are being persecuted by the multiculturalists and so on and so forth, and feminists, and don't you hate those? And then, of course, this is where the misogyny comes in also, right? We hate the feminists because they're trying to destroy white male culture. And so the young, and some of it is just understanding the psychology of teenage boys. They love transgressive humor. And this is about as transgressive as it gets, especially it becomes transgressive, especially if you don't actually understand. I mean, it becomes a fun sort of transgression if you don't actually understand the history that we're talking about. And unfortunately, a lot of young people are not getting the necessary historical knowledge about what it was that the Nazis did. And it's also the anti-Semitic theories and claims that these were, that the Holocaust was a hoax and that sort of things are also become very widespread, because as soon as anybody does actually bring up the history, then a lot of these young twits will immediately go, oh, that's just a hoax, the Holo hoax, and those numbers are a hoax, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, this is the worrying thing. And I mean, in a way, this segues into also to have a quick chat about sort of social media and extremism. Because one of the things, like on things like YouTube, the algorithms, if you, let's say you Googled the Holocaust, because of the way algorithms work, the more popular content gets pushed up. And so if the conspiracy theory content's the popular content, that ends up going up higher than factual content. And, I mean, I know you've been looking at sort of the way social media companies are trying to tackle extremism. And I know you had an experience with Twitter last year.
Right.
What are your kind of thoughts, observations and experiences with these social media companies and what they're doing? I know different platforms are doing different things at the moment about this.
Well, my experience, with Twitter was that Twitter banned me for running pictures from my book cover, or running images from the cover of my book, which include, these little stars with Klan hoods on them. We had to go through about 2 weeks of negotiation before we managed to work that out. And Twitter, honestly, is actually more responsive to these issues than Facebook. Twitter at least is trying to figure it out. It actually, because they tried to solve it with algorithms, by using algorithms to detect this stuff and to ban people. And so what was happening was, journalists who cover this stuff were getting banned by their algorithm for stupid reasons, and then they'd have to wait to get reinstated after making an appeal. So they've been working on it. At least they've made a good faith effort, as far as I could tell, to try to rectify it. But it's a very complex problem that actually is going to entail a fair amount of hiring on their part to deal with it adequately. Facebook, on the other hand, they have banned some of the most obvious haters and conspiracy theorists. However, you still have, but it's reached its limit. And now we have guys like white nationalists, Nicholas Fuentes, who is kind of leading what they call the Groyper War.
Well, what's that one?
Well, the Groyper is an adaptation of Pepe the Frog, which was yet another mainstream symbol that got hijacked by the alt-right. And so now Groyper is a sort of version of Pepe with that includes, clown hair and that sort of thing, and it's an adaptation. But what they're really doing is, it's still the same thing. It's still using this cartoon irony to both recruit young white men and to trigger the liberals, right? So Facebook is sort of back and forth, but I've found that they are the least responsive to actually confronting and dealing with these problems. So to go back a little bit to what to these young men that were using the Nazi salute, and notably in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I just did a post this weekend writing about how these guys, a year later, I mean, basically this was in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And you all remember the photo of those guys all standing out. It was the entire junior class of boys at this high school standing on the steps of the school giving the Hitler salute. And interestingly, afterwards, even though when the story about it erupted across the pages of newspapers around America, the local school district was pretty defiant and just said, well, we can't really discern what these young men's intent was. They may have just been joking and so on and so forth. And we're not going to punish. We're just not going to punish these guys because we don't think it was obvious, clear what the problem was. And so the result of all that coddling was that in the past years since then is that the school has just become a cesspool of open racism. We know this now because a young black woman who was attending the school was just inundated with threats, bullying, violence, sexual assault, people shoving her in the hallways, having Confederate flags shoved in her face, being called the N-word, threatening notes left in her locker. So at one point, one student even asked this black woman, or actually asked another kid right in her presence, is it a hate crime if you slap a black girl? And, you know, this is what happened. It's when you give these kids a green light. It just that school has now become just a cesspool of open racism, and interestingly, the school district is still in complete denial about that this is what's happened. So you know, this is how it spreads, and it's a really a problem.
Like what we're doing, connect with us on Twitter at DryCleanerCast. Support the show by becoming a DryCleanerCast Patreon subscriber today. Go to patreon.com/DryCleanerCast. That's patreon.com/DryCleanerCast.
Is it an exaggeration to say right-wing terrorism is growing?
No, not at all. Adding a database or putting together a database that's, I did a database project for domestic terrorism between 2008 and 17 that was published by Reveal News in June of 2017. And we are now in the process of updating that database. And it's very clear that the trend has accelerated in the last 2 years when we look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Not significantly accelerated, except a couple of things that have happened. There has been a significant decline in left-wing terrorism, as it were, which is already a pretty small portion of the terrorism database anyway. And what's happening on the right-wing side is that the lethality of their acts is increasing significantly because the weaponry that they're using now is so much more powerful. And this includes everything from El Paso to Pittsburgh to all of these other incidents that have happened in between, in which right-wing domestic terrorists have gone on slaughtering rampages.
Yeah, Yeah, no, it's terrible. In the UK, the counter-terrorism police have claimed they foiled 7 far-right linked terror plots. And on top of that, a group called Hope Not Hate have helped foil a plot against a right-wing plot to murder a British MP, Rosie Cooper. And they literally foiled that just last year. So that, and in 2016, we had the Labour MP, Joe Cox, who was murdered by a far-right extremist who apparently had mental health problems. But it seems to be very much growing in the UK as well. And it's and across Europe. And I don't know if there's anything you've observed about what's going on with the far right in the UK and Europe. This may be similar or different to America.
Yes. Well, you know, we had the synagogue attack in Halle, Germany. We had another planned synagogue attack up near Oslo, Norway. There have been a number of other incidents that that make it clear that radical right domestic terrorism is really very much on the rise and is also potentially very, very lethal. So although the one in Oslo wasn't that lethal, it was a teenage boy who wanted to follow in the footsteps of the Christchurch killer. And he only chose a synagogue instead of a mosque. And he decided, but he was knocked down by worshipers before he could actually shoot anybody. So, you know, he one of the weird and rather frightening aspects of all this is its gamification. I don't know if you're familiar with this aspect of it.
No, no. Tell us a bit about gamification.
So many, many of the alt-right kids are coming to this ideology through video games. They're being recruited on video game platforms. And this is why Gamergate, the whole Gamergate controversy was considered a very central origin point for the alt-right generally.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you happened to see any of the footage, that horrifying footage from Christchurch.
I avoided it personally, but
I would like to have, except that I have to analyze it, and in analyzing it, the number one thing that stuck out to me was that it was like watching Doom.
Yeah,
it was like watching somebody play Doom. It was almost like a first person shooter game, And bizarrely enough, all around, not just Christchurch, but also around some of these other events, because these guys are live streaming this stuff, in many cases, what actually is happening is that their supporters and fellow ideologues on the internet are now scoring their murderous rampages. So the Christchurch killer probably has one of the highest scores of anyone because he murdered, you know, 51 people and was very effective in creating, you know, terror and was very effective in doing all these things. So he got a really high score among the alt-righters who are fans of this stuff. Whereas the guy in Poway, California, who attempted to do the same thing at a synagogue down in Poway, but only managed to actually kill one person, he got a very low score.
Yeah. My God, so this is really going to encourage people to basically try and commit bigger mass murders, isn't it? This
Absolutely,
is appalling.
It is. Yeah, yeah. So it's part of the culture that they see human life as just another score on a video game, and this is part of the.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is essentially the nature of the radical right, that it utterly dehumanizes other people to the point that you can commit genocide, and it's just another dot on your map. you know?
God, yes, that's important. I said, what's is there an international effort to try and kind of prevent this? Because it's internet based, that's quite complicated to keep track of.
Yes, well, about 6 months ago, Jacinda Ardern and Emmanuel Macron announced there in Paris an international effort to try to force the internet platforms to start cutting this stuff out. And to not only that, they want to have countries pass laws that would force these internet platforms to become more responsible. And I fully support that effort. So, interestingly, Donald Trump, of course, refused to attend and has refused to participate in that campaign.
Yeah. No great surprise there, sadly, but there we go. but yeah, we're getting close to, the hour, so I just want to take us a little bit into some of the recent anti-Semitic attacks that have gone on. So in December there was an anti-Semitic attack against a Jewish market in New Jersey. Six people were killed, and that included a police officer and two of the gunmen and three members of the public. Can you talk to us a little bit about about that attack and what was different about that one from some of the other far-right attacks that have been going on against the Jewish community and other minorities?
Sure. Well, that what made that one actually rather weird was that the attackers were African-American. And and it threw a lot of people, you know, how can anti-Semites be black, or how can white supremacists be black? And and let's just be clear, what of course it actually represents is this larger vein of anti-Semitism bubbling up through all parts of society. But these guys were members of the Hebrew Israelite movement, which is this kind of bizarre world that I've written about occasionally when I was with the Southern Poverty Law Center. These guys are essentially far right black activists the best known exponent of this worldview is the Nation of Islam. Louis Farrakhan and those folks, and they're often described as being left wing, but there really is nothing left wing about them. They are really fundamentally very far right, and their anti-Semitism is really unmistakable. Of course, Farrakhan's anti-Semitism is well established. But these guys in the Hebrew Israelite movement take this sort of black nationalism to its next logical or illogical step, in that they adopt essentially a black version of what we've known for many years as Christian identity. Christian identity was the underlying belief system at the Aryan Nations, which I covered in the beginning in the late 70s. And it's this idea that it's actually a belief system, a sort of religious movement, arguing that white people are the true children of Israel, that Jews are literally descended from Satan.
Good grief, yeah.
And that... that non-whites are soulless mud people whose existence doesn't matter, right? And that only white people actually matter in the eyes of God. Well, the Hebrew Israelite movement essentially adapts Christian identity for black people, and they argue that black people are the true children of Israel, and that Jews are satanic, and that all whites, as well as other non-black people are essentially mud people. So the people who went on this attack in Jersey City were people who believed the system, and in many cases there have been a number of incidents of violence associated with Black Hebrew Israelites, usually in the sort of sense that they also adopt what we call sovereign citizen ideology, which argues that they are free from the rule of the government, and they can declare themselves free of the government by filing some papers. So that's where these guys are coming from.
One random question comes to my head. Are their ideas becoming more popular with all the... There's a lot of important debate going on about racism with within white communities, things like that. Are these extremist views becoming more popular because of aspects of this debate, do you think?
I don't know to what extent they're becoming more popular in terms of, you know, the real numbers of adherence that they have. I just know that these ideas are spreading to more and more people. But I think that, you know, within their respective communities, that they're necessarily really gaining a foothold. I think it's just everything is just ratcheted up a notch. What I do think is ratcheting up mostly is the violent rhetoric. People are becoming more violent and are more inclined to not only speak violently, but eventually act violently.
Yeah, it is a growing concern because everybody just seems to want to resolve everything. I mean, like we see it in movies and things, everything. It's just everybody wants to try and resolve everything with a firearm these days, and it's just... it's not healthy. It really isn't. It isn't healthy.
No. And it's a message that we get all the time, you know, that the violence is the only solution to these problems. And, that's a pretty toxic message.
Here's a I feel like an old man asking this question. Because I'm a child of the 80s, so I grew up a lot with action films and things like that. So I've seen plenty of action movies where, you know, like Die Hard and worse. I enjoy Die Hard, by the way. It has this phenomena of the kind of the Second Amendment rights and guns and all that sort of stuff. Has that grown more because of those types of movies and that generation who watched those movies, do you think?
Possibly. I actually think that a lot of it has to do, you know, I don't know that it's so much just action movies. I think it also extends to Marvel movies, to tell you the truth. And this is the idea that this, the whole, we're really enamored of the myth of heroism, that it is the hero that is the exemplary hero who can make the difference in society and to whom we all look up to. And what it actually does is creates large numbers of people who are ambitious to become heroes, which is fine, except that there's a lot of hero mythology is actually quite toxic, especially in the way that it encourages people to create enemies, because a hero, in order to exist, has to have an enemy, has to have someone against whom he is striving to defeat. And so this actually creates a lot of enemy creation. This is, we actually concoct and devise whole enemies because we have to see ourselves as heroic. So, for instance, there's been this huge upswing in people claiming and arguing that that anti-fascists are this huge existential threat to democracy and our well-being as an open society, when in fact they really are very minor component, and particularly the any of them who, the very few of them who are actually violent are really quite tiny in number, but there are some. And more to the point, it's just a very tiny, almost insignificantly powerful. I mean, has almost no power whatsoever. Certainly not in the political realm. Anti-fascists have no pull at all. And so the idea that these guys are some kind of that anti-fascists are this huge existential threat is mostly a product of the need of first the need of people to imagine that there are enemies on both sides, because a lot of people, particularly centrists, if they see suddenly this rise in right-wing extremism, they go, the reflex position is, well, don't both sides do it? And so they go looking for violent people on the left side as being a cause of this. Well, trust me on this, folks. Anti-fascists do not cause fascism, okay? Yeah. Believe me, that's not how the dynamic works. Fascists cause fascism, okay? Fascists recruit more fascists, and they spread fascism. So that's your problem. And it's so people who do the both sides do it thing just drive me straight up the goddamn wall.
Yeah,
so.
No, I can understand that. Well, we're going to wrap up, but I have one probably last big question. As it's January, and it's traditionally the month where we look ahead and wonder what the year ahead has in store for us, and I'm not looking for a crystal ball prediction. However, what are you kind of keeping an eye out for this year? Is there anything in particular?
Yeah, I'm looking for a couple of things. One is that I expect there to be more... a lot more of this patriot-style resistance to democratic rule, as we are seeing in Richmond. Though I mostly expect it to occur on a local level, like on county level, but I expect some of that to become fairly violent. And secondly, remember, one of the things that happened around Richmond was that the FBI arrested a number of these characters who were planning violence. The neo-Nazi organization called The Base, which deals primarily in actual terrorism, and they're unapologetically about it, about terrorism. These guys, you know, the FBI did a good job of keying in on some of the violent actors who were probably planning to participate in Monday's event and arrested them before they could. So I think that was a lot of the reason we didn't actually have any violence yesterday. But I expect a lot of these guys to continue acting now, because it's not just The Base. We also have Adam Wolf and Division, and we have these various other neo-Nazi organizations that are really quite unapologetic about planning to engage in violent terrorism. And I expect to see them target politicians, and I expect to see them target journalists.
Yeah, not good.
Well, and that's what they talk. That's who they talk about. They definitely talk in their chat rooms about, I mean, those are the two main areas of people that they want to target. And interestingly, it also, that just happens to coincide with the kinds of people that Donald Trump targets in his rhetoric.
We had an incident in the UK last year with a popular opinion columnist called Owen Jones, who's a sort of left-wing opinion columnist, and he was attacked in a pub on a night out, and it's at the moment, I think, is at trial, and they have uncovered connections to the far right with the perpetrators of that terrible attack.
Yes, I was seeing that story. Owen Jones is a classic case in the UK. And of course, in the US, we had the MAGA bomber, the guy who
I forgot about him.
Took all of all of the people who hated, or who Donald Trump hated, and he sent pipe bombs to them. Some people call it stochastic terrorism. Mm. I call it scripted violence, but it's all essentially the same thing, where somebody is writing a script and telling people who to go attack, and so people go attack them. And it's really an ugly part of our supposed system of free speech.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you think, are there any positive things that you think might come out of this year?
Hard to say.
It is.
I would love to say that Donald Trump is likely to lose the election. And I do think he is likely to lose. But I also think that if and when he does lose, there's likely to be a serious wave of domestic terrorism that follows it. I think it's going to be because Trump is going to claim that he was cheated, that the people who dropped him out of, or who defeated him, did so illegitimately, and that it was, he's going to do what Donald Trump does. And I think there's a lot of people out there who are so utterly enamored of his cult of personality, who are so swept up in it that they will act out violently. Yes.
Not good. Well, David, thank you so much for your time today. Now, this question feels a bit inappropriate now we've talked about what we've talked about, but where can people find out more about you and your work?
So probably the best place to track my work is just my Twitter account, which is under my name, David Neiwert. That's Neiwert.
Yeah.
And of course, I am employed by dailycoast.com.
Yep.
So you can read my work there, although I, only write about twice a week. So, you can subscribe to my RSS feed there if you want to, or you can just read everybody else's work at Coast too.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it. Thank you, David.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Chris.
Like what we're doing? Connect with us on Twitter @DryCleanerCast. Support the show by becoming a Dry Cleaner Cast Patreon subscriber today. Go to patreon.com/drycleanercast. That's patreon.com/drycleanercast. Thanks for listening. This is Need to Know.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.